This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening. Welcome. Thank you for coming. So tonight there are three shiurim. The opening shiur is negotiating with terrorists. This is a continuation of what we discussed last week, but it's a standalone shiur. And 3 points of introduction. The first is that, like I said last week, I was somewhat hesitant to discuss the topic at all. I think it's a very sensitive topic. It's very fresh, and this is a real situation, an ongoing situation. And whilst I was backwards and forwards, and I think there was interest in this topic, exploring the whole topic should be expressed as a form of tefillah, as it were, Takodesh Baruch Hu, that Amitz Hashem, the hostages should be released swiftly and safely, and we should have Besuras Tovus, Amitz Hashem, from Eretz Yisrael. The second point is, whatever we're discussing is really the principles. And we don't know the full picture in terms of the strategy and everything else, all the other aspects of the ongoing situation. And therefore, we're discussing really the principles of this whole topic. And the third point, which I think is important to make as well, well, whatever we do conclude, whether it's appropriate, not appropriate, that does not take away from the fact that we are delighted every time we see an image of a hostage released. Of course, we feel so, you know, besimcha and relieved for them. And Mitzvah Hashem, like I say, all the other hostages should be returned swiftly and safely to the warmth of their family and their loved ones. So last week we discussed the background. We mentioned the Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah says in Gittin, "Ein poisonous hashvim yosak ledemehen," which means you're not allowed to redeem hostages for an exorbitant situation, whether that's monetary or whatever the exchange happens to be. We also mentioned in Tosfos, the Gemara gives two reasons for this. Well, why is that? Why did Chazal make this mipnei tikkun ha'olam, for the betterment of society, for a public good? So the two reasons given in the Gemara is that it would maybe cause undue financial pressure on the community, and therefore, if large amounts of money would have to be raised to exchange or to release hostages, then that would be an exorbitant burden on the community. The second reason given is mishum de lo ligruv v'laisu tfei, which might incentivize, encourage further kidnappings. And the Gemara says the nafka minna, of course, would be the practical difference would be if a particular hostage's family has the means to redeem them. If the reason is the first reason, that it would cause duchka de tzibura, pressure on the community, that is not relevant because it's the personal individual's family that have the means to do it. They're not turning to the community. But if the reason is because that might motivate further kidnappings, then that would not be a factor and that would still apply. The fact that they have personal funds is irrelevant because that might encourage other kidnappings. So the Gemara leaves it unresolved. And therefore you see both of those reasons feature in later writings. Tosfos brings various exceptions to this, and we discussed some of those last week. The first exception we saw was Gufay and Ishto, which means a person himself or his wife, a spouse, that you would be able to redeem them. That is an exception to the rule. And then another exception we saw was the Talmud Chacham Muflog. A Talmud Chacham, a leader of the generation, an outstanding Talmud Chacham, or someone who has the potential to be. That was another exception, and we're going to come back to that in a moment. And then also if captives are in mortal danger, Sakonis Nefashos, Tosfos talks about. And how that plays out in Halacha today, again, is discussed. We'll mention that. And lastly, Tosfos mentions this concept of Bashas Churban, i.e. in times of Churban, Lo Shaykh to Lo Ligri, there's no concern about this might motivate to encourage further kidnappings, because they're doing it anyway. That's just what they do, and therefore whether or not you negotiate, it's happening anyway, and it's not really a factor. So those are the four exceptions we saw in the Tosfos last week. And then, of course, we mentioned last week the Maharam Mirotenberg. The Maharam Mirotenberg is one of the most famous cases on this topic, and this is back in the 13th century. The Maharam Mirotenberg was one of the last of the Baalei Tosfos. He was kidnapped in Germany. He was the leader of Ashkenazi Jewry, and he was kidnapped, and he refused, even though there was perhaps precedent and desire to redeem him, he refused to be ransomed, and he died in prison. And not only did he die in prison, that the, his body wasn't released for many years afterwards, until someone came along and did redeem him on condition that he be buried next to him. In fact, you can go today and see the kever of the Maharam in Rottenburg with someone called Alexander Wimpfin, who redeemed him. And it's interesting because you don't really see Kvarim of the Baal HaTosfos. This is going back a long time. But the Maharam in Rottenburg, you can see till today. Anyway, so that was last week. Now, what I want to just focus on today, if you turn to the second side, paragraph 4, if you're listening online, please email me at j.golka@gmail.com. I'll send you the handout. Let's take a look at the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. We didn't do this last week. So the Rambam and Hilchas Matnas Aniyim, there at the top of paragraph 4, he says, "Ein poydinis ashvuyim b'yes al kadeh al demehem." You're not allowed to redeem a captive for more than their value. Mepnei tikkun ha'olam. So that's just a quote from the Mishnah in Gittin. Says the Rambam, "Shelo yihyu ha'ovim roidfin achareihem lishvoisom." He goes for the second reason, i.e., that it might motivate other kidnappings. Ve'ein mavrichin es ashvuyim, which is another aspect of the Gemara there, which I didn't go into. So the Rambam brings that reason. Now the Shulchan Aruch, unsurprisingly, follows the Rambam and says, you can't redeem captives for more than their value, and again, an exorbitant amount. So again, he goes for that reason, because it might be that they would incentivize further kidnappings. Now, and then the Shulchan Aruch goes on and gives some exceptions that we've seen in Tosfos. Avil Adam Yochel Liftes Es Atzmai, a person can redeem himself, B'chol Masha Yirtze, with whatever means, whatever funds he wants to. V'chein L'Talmud Chacham. So another exception, Talmud Chacham we mentioned. He has the potential to be an Adam Gadol. That is an exception. Etc. etc. And we saw that Ishta is Kagufa. He brings out references you to the Torah. So that is the Shulchan Aruch. Now, let's turn to today, because that's where it's relevant. It's actually it's a fascinating topic. Again, in Mitzvah Hashem, this should all be theoretical. What is the position nowadays, in the 21st century? Because this was sadly not uncommon in the late 20th century. In the 1970s, there was a lot of hijackings and kidnappings, and the Israeli government took a different stance in different years. So, for example, in the early years, in 1970, there was the hijacking of five planes by what it was then known as the PFLP, which was sort of the predecessor of the PLO. And on one of those planes, you had Rav Hutner. There was quite a well-known case. Rav Hutner was one of the Gedolim, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. And so that was a well-known case. But there were other cases as well. There was in 1972, in the Olympics, the Munich massacre. And of course, Entebbe in 1976. Now, in those situations, the Israeli government took the viewpoint that we don't negotiate with terrorists. They, of course, entertained rescue missions, but Entebbe, the most famous one, but with Munich they said they're not negotiating, and it was the German army who had to try and rescue. It was a botched effort. Sadly, all the 11, I think it was 11 Israeli Olympians who were killed. But that was the view they took. Now, what is the rationale of that view? So it's best articulated. This I saw in an article online by someone called Baruch Davidson, but he quotes an interesting source as a precedent, but just to give you an idea of the rationale. So this is, I'm reading to what he says. In 1993, American pilot Michael Durant was captured by General Mohammed Farah Aidid's men in Mogadishu in Somalia. Okay, so an American pilot was captured. It was called the Black Hawk Down incident. And the former U.S. ambassador, Robert Oakley, he sent the following message to Aidid, the Somalian general. This is what he said. "I guarantee you, we are not going to pay or trade for him in any way, shape or form. So what we'll decide to do is that we have to rescue him. And whether we have the right place or the wrong place, there's going to be a fight with your people. The minute the guns start again, all restraint on the US side goes. Just look at the stuff coming in here now. An aircraft carrier, tanks, gunships, the works. Once the fighting starts, All this pent-up anger is going to be released. This whole part of the city will be destroyed. Men, women, children, camels, cats, dogs, goats, donkeys, everything. That would really be tragic for all. Durrant was released unconditionally the next day. So that is, of course, the viewpoint that if you don't negotiate with terrorists, you show strength, position of strength, and that's one aspect of it. However, there have been precedents where there have been prisoner swaps by the Israeli government. The first one really was in 1957. There, one Israeli pilot was exchanged for 5,000 POWs, prisoners of war. But that was slightly different because Egypt at the time was, well, even now of course, but Egypt was a legitimate government and it wasn't a terrorist organization. However, in 1979, that was the first one with a terrorist organization, and there one soldier was, the way they describe it, sadly, is 70, they were, was traded for 70 security prisoners, they call it, right? But that was, of course, the terrorists. In 1985, you know, three Israeli soldiers were abducted in the first Lebanon War, and they were released for 1,150 terrorists. And of course, the Gilad Shalit case in 2006, he was in captivity for close to 5 years, and then there was a release of, I think it was over a thousand terrorists. Now, it's complicated because, you know, when you release terrorists, we're talking about people who are more often who have blood on their hands. And not only do they have blood on their hands, but they have shown no remorse and no resistance to continuing their activities. And that is the problem. If I'm not mistaken, one of the terrorists who was released in the Gilad Shalit case is one of the masterminds of the October the 7th tragedy. So it's very complicated. But it's complicated because, as Netanyahu said, when he stands there and there are hundreds of parents in front of him crying for their children, you know, what are you going to say? So it's not straightforward. Now, let's just take a look at some interesting points. There's a tshuva of the Ikveh Sein. The Ikveh Sein is Reb Shechter, Herschel Shechter, a well-known Torah personality in America. He writes the following in one of his Sfarim. He's referring to the 1970 TWA hijack. And as I mentioned, famously, Rav Huttner was on board one of the planes, and his daughter, and his son-in-law, Rabbi Yonason David. And they were on the tarmac within the Jordanian desert for many weeks. Now, at the time, Talmidim of Rav Huttner wanted to pay some money and through diplomatic means to try and get him released. And they turned to the Tosfos we mentioned, that for a Talmid Chacham Muflug, you know, you're allowed to. And the question was put to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So take a look at, it's the second box on the second side, Be'ikveh HaTzayim. For Hayu Min HaRabonim, Oz, and there were Rabonim, Shehayu Suvurim Loima, there's no question, he said, that Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner had the status of a Talmud Chacham Muflug, an outstanding Torah personality. And therefore, you can release him for you know, a huge sum of money. That Rabbi Yaakov responded, that actually that's not correct. Because the whole concept of pidyon shavuim, of trading and negotiating with terrorists, that's only in a time of peace, not during wartime. You cannot argue that you're obligated to stop fighting in order to release captives with money, because in the middle of war, you're giving millions of pounds to the enemy, which of course they're going to use for their war effort, which is against you. By giving large sums of money to the enemy, that will, you know, support their war effort. So the question, of course, is, this was in 1970. What war was going on then? You've got 1948 was the War of Independence. You've got Suez in 56. You've got 67, the Six-Day War. You've got Yom Kippur in 73 and Lebanon in 82 and an ongoing, you know, situation since. But In 1970, which war is he referring to? Why does he categorize it as Shas Milchama and not Shas Shalom? That to say that you cannot therefore negotiate and trade and give money back to the enemy, even to release the Talmud Chacham Mufluk. So says Rabbi Yaakov, an unbelievable thing. Because he said in 1948, in Tov Shin Ches, 1948, Hekimu Mamshelas Yehudim, that's when the state was declared, Beretz Yisrael, V'nilchmu bohem kol ha'aravim shesuvoseihem, all the Arab nations attacked Eretz Yisrael, V'afshe kvah hufsu ko'esh, ze kamashonim, and maybe this many years has passed, he's writing, you know, in 1970, has passed since 1948, the independence war, Mikol Mokum ha'aravim adayin lo hishlimu, Imam Medina, they haven't made peace with the existence of Eretz Israel, of the state of Israel. Chutz Mitzrayim, she'asu heskem shalom in Medina Israel. Apart from Egypt, which made a peace treaty, they were at war with Eretz Israel, with Klal Israel. V'nimse shekol ha'melchomas v'kol ha'prois, and therefore all the wars and incursions v'kol ha'muhamas she'aruchim and everything they're plotting against us, the Arabs ad yomein until today, ad bichlal hakol hemshich me'oisa ha'melchoma ha'rishayna me'melchemes ha'shichro. It's just a continuation of the War of Independence. So says Rabbi Yaakov, an amazing thing. They still are plotting and hoping to destroy Eretz Israel, to destroy the state of Israel, to destroy Klal Yisrael's existence in Eretz Israel. And therefore, that it categorizes it as a Shas Milchoma, which prevents Pidyon Shavuyim even for a Talmud Chacham Mufluk. So that was Rabbi Yaakov's position. I heard that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein did not agree with this and said that one should, in the case of Rav Huttner. But either way, it was actually it was the Jordanian government which crushed the PLO at that particular time and sort of forced them to release the terrorists. To release the hostages. But that's the exception of the Talmud Chacham Mufluk. Now, regarding captives in mortal danger, there's the Pischei Tshuva in Yeridein, Simon Reishon and Beis. He quotes a machlokes about this because of the situation is this: if on one hand, Tosa says, if there's sakonis nefoshis, if the hostages' lives are in danger, that could be a reason to allow some sort of trading. And so you may think to yourself, well, isn't every situation their lives are in danger? And the answer seemingly is not. There are some situations where they want the hostages alive in order they can get money, but there are some situations where there is an indifference to life and there is sakonis nefoshis. Now, if there is, that is a machlokes. The Pischei Tshuva quotes the Eish Avraham, who's quoting the Nachlas Yeshua, to be makom de'ikel lemeches lekatola poidin. When there is a sakonis nefoshes, the captives are in mortal danger, you are allowed to redeem them. However, he quotes the Yad Eliyahu, who says that that's not the case, that's not the halacha, and there is debate about that. Now, a further complication is also debated by more contemporary poskim. The Reb Shaul Yisraeli is quoted, Rabbi Bleich has an article in one of his contemporary halachic problems. He quotes, he has a whole section on this, and he quotes someone called Rav Shaul Yisraeli, who was one of the Dayanim in the based in Yerushalayim, and he says a very interesting svara, that the Israeli government saying that we have to do whatever we can to redeem a soldier who was kidnapped is equivalent to a person's own instinct of self-preservation. And just like the first heter we spoke about is himself, is nafsha, his own person and his wife, that is considered self-preservation as a person's natural instinct, and therefore Chazal never were masakin against that, they never instituted against it. Well, says Rabbi Shaul Yisraeli, the Israeli government, saving a soldier is equivalent to that, because it's bad for morale. And it should surely bolster the spirits of every soldier knowing, going into battle, that my government, my country, will do whatever they can to make sure that they're going to try and get me back if things don't go well. Now, that, however, is debatable, because others argue and say that, on the contrary, that it's bad for morale. So whilst the traditional sort of long-standing argument is that knowing the IDF will do everything in its power to free you boosts morale, some say it's actually the opposite, because first of all, if they're doing so in order to release known terrorists, that itself is very demoralizing. So that's one aspect. And the second aspect is that some soldiers feel, and there was even a petition by some soldiers, that if they're going around risking their lives in the, you know, dark alleyways of Gaza in order to capture known terrorists, they feel frustrated that a few years down the line, these terrorists will be, you know, released to save them. And they say to themselves, we don't want to be traded. So again, it's a very complicated situation. And like I said at the beginning, we don't know the full picture of all the strategic decisions in place. Just one final point. The Rav Avadya Yosef, apparently in Entebbe, made the point of Ein Sofik Moitzi Midei Vadai, which means you've got a situation of a Sofik and Vadai. There's a Vadai situation where I can release this hostage right now. My Sofik may be, in years down the line, this terrorist who we're going to release in order to redeem this hostage may cause further damage. That's a Sofik. When you've got a Sofik and a Vadai, Ein Sofik Moitzi Midei Vadai, the Vadai trumps. Now that apparently is what he said, but again, you can argue it. You can say that terrorists reoffending is not even a Sofik. Sadly, it's closer to a Vadai. It's closer to inevitable almost. And so these are some of the principles and some of the issues that the Poskim and are grappling with. It's just to summarize, what have we seen? We've seen the Mishnah in Gittin says there is a takon of tikkun olam not to be poidin shavu in yosach kadei de mehen, for the reasons either because it will be too much of a financial pressure on the community or because it will encourage and motivate further kidnappings. And there are several exceptions to that. The ones that we've seen are yourself or your wife, a Talmud Chacham Muflug, or the potential to be, Sakonis Nefoshis is debated, and also after the Churban, because that's, they're anyway out to get us, as it were, and that's what they do anyway. So it's a complicated area, and lots of unknowns in terms of the full picture. But like I said at the beginning, Yemes Hashem, we should only hear good news, and we should, all the hostages should be released swiftly and safely, and Mitzvah Hashem, there should be shalom lanu l'chol Yisrael.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.